Send us a WhatsApp voice note on 072 5671 567.
Now, sad news greeting us this morning of the death of another revered struggle veteran. Former PAC leader Philip Khosana has passed away at the age of 80. And he's probably best remembered as the organizer of the mass march in Cape Town in 1960, in which he led 30,000 anti-pass protesters all the way from Langa into the heart of the city in the days following the Sharpeville massacre. He would be arrested. He would later be imprisoned by the apartheid government. And then after the dawn of democracy, he became a farmer and in his latter years really chose to live a relatively quiet life on a small plot that he'd inherited in the Winterveld, north of Pretoria, where he'd grown up looking after his father's livestock. And he helped launch the Winterveld United Farmers Association there, spent his years tending to a rather successful citrus farm and thoroughly enjoying the life of the farmer. Now, I know this because I had the privilege of interviewing him ahead of Freedom Day 3 years ago, it must have been, as the country marked 20 years of democracy. And we thought we would share that interview with you again today, just to give us a sense of the man that he was and his reflections at that time on what had become of the country and the freedom that he and so many others had fought so hard for. I started off by asking him how it came to be that someone who was in 1959, just another student, a 23-year-old student at UCT, 1 year later was leading one of the biggest demonstrations Cape Town had ever seen.
Well, I was a student at the University of Cape Town in 1959. Mm-hmm. And that was the year when the organization called the Pan-Africanist Congress was formed by Robert Sobukwe mm-hmm. and his colleagues. And being young, militant students who felt that the ANC was becoming too slow and not pushing very hard, we, as young people, got attracted and we joined and supported Robert Sobukwe.
Now, I know that you were involved in the regional structures of the PAC, and on the eve of that big demonstration, the regional chairman was arrested, which meant that you inherited the leadership almost overnight. You led that march through the Cape Town CBD, protesting against the injustices of apartheid, protesting against the past system. Tell us what happened when you arrived in the Cape Town CBD.
The march into the city, actually there were two smaller marches into the city, but let's talk of the one of the 30th of March, mm-hmm. 1960, when we got into the city. Several of our people had already been arrested. Actually, it was 10 days after Sharpeville. And in the air, it was clear that the government were out and out to arrest people in preparation for what we would later realize it was a state of emergency coming up. It was a preparation mm-hmm. for a state of emergency. And there we marched into the city. We went up Duval Drive. Mm-hmm. Up Duval Drive, that is the road.
Yes.
And the purpose was to go and demand the release of our people, because the arrests were there just to round up our leaders and leave the people without leadership. Now, that we realized was going to create lots of problems with you. It was clear that we were like cutting the head of a chicken and leaving the chicken to run without a head,
mm-hmm.
which we felt was completely out of order. Therefore, on the basis of that, we decided we're going to march into Parliament.
Yes.
We're going to turn into Parliament. We're going to march into Parliament and there demand the release of our people.
Mm-hmm. Now, for your troubles in leading that crowd and helping to maintain order and calm amongst that crowd, you were then arrested yourself.
I was arrested. Before I got arrested, I met some of the biggest police chiefs, you know, mm-hmm. General Ruddy Mayer and Colonel Terre Blanche and Major Rieder of Philippi Police Station. And I told them that I wanted an appointment with the minister.
Yes.
Because the police were just not helping us. And, of course, if you imagine that that was 1960, yeah. in the heart of apartheid.
Yes.
And for this little, short, little man from Langa in short pants to come and demand talking to a minister, it's just, you know.
Unheard of, yeah.
Just not acceptable. Mm. But because the crowd was growing heavy, we were having, you know, close to 30,000. Well, the press has estimated 30,000.
Mm-hmm.
It was clear that unless they bowed down to my demand, they were simply not going to get that crowd out of Cape Town. And there was a danger that if you keep a larger and a larger and a larger crowd, even the best of leaders would not be able to control it.
Mm.
So they came back after about 30 minutes to come and tell me that the minister had agreed to meet me.
Unbelievable.
The minister had agreed to meet me on condition that we got the whole crowd out of the city of Cape Town.
Right.
Now, I can tell you that according to the instructions we got from the office of President Sobukwe, it was that if the police are cooperating with us, we should not defy them. We must agree with them and work with them because we don't want to precipitate violence.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on the grounds that I asked the police to give me a police microphone to tell the people why we had to leave the crowd. But the deal was that the same day in the afternoon, I would come with a small delegation to come and meet the minister. That is what happened.
That is what happened. Now, after that, despite having played that role in, as you say, getting the crowd to disperse peacefully, you found yourself arrested and on trial, released on bail and left South Africa later that same year, I think it was, to go into exile.
Yes.
I want to, seeing as we are reflecting today on Freedom Day and the election and our 20 years of democracy, I want to fast forward you to 1994. Were you still in exile or had you come home yet?
1994, I was just on the eve of coming home. I was then working as an official of the United Nations. I had taken up a job with the UN.
Yes.
But I was posted just here in Botswana. And therefore, all the things that were happening at home were just there for me to see. And mm-hmm. then I did cross. I didn't come to vote because I was in Botswana. And there was no arrangement for people who are outside the country to come and vote.
To come and vote. So what was that like for you, to see the country going to the polls and not be able to be part of it?
Well, it didn't worry me. I felt I was part of the game.
Okay.
I was part of the game. I was pretty. But more than anything, it was the manner in which we moved from the old apartheid into the new South Africa. That was some kind of miracle.
Yes, it absolutely was. When you did finally come home, 1996, I think it was, what
yes.
did you find? What was it like to come back after so many years away and find yourself a citizen of this new fledgling democracy?
Yeah. It was a very strange feeling coming home. Although we always entertained the hope that we would be coming home one day, although we couldn't prove how, we hoped that we would fight and the world would support us and all that. But, you know, it was a very remote hope. But there, change had come.
Mm. Mm.
And it was one of these things that with all the weaknesses and the inconsistencies which we thought we saw, but the fact that change had come was one of the greatest things that ever happened. And it would be so comfortable to think of change in my lifetime while I'm still alive. I mean, I can still go to Cape Town today and talk to people, and some people actually don't even seem to believe what I'm saying because I had been through out all this.
I mean, it is amazing, an amazing and, as you say, miraculous transition that's taken place. For you, I mean, you came back, you didn't reintegrate into the armed forces or anything like that. You were, I think, past the age where that would have happened. So you, what did you do?
When I came back, well, I had just clocked 60 years and I went to the armed forces headquarters and they said that I was just a little too old to integrate. But then they demobbed me. There's something called
demobilization. Yes.
Yes, I was demobbed. I was given an army number. Well, they call it a force number.
Okay.
I was given a force number and given some demob money, you know, mm-hmm. thank me for all my good years. And then that was parting the ways with the armed forces. Mm.
And what did you do next?
Since then, I'm a farmer.
You're
I'm
a farmer?
I'm on the land, yes.
In which area?
Since 2002, well, let me say, as soon as I came back, I went into the area where I was born, where I grew up, and I was elected by the community as a local councillor.
Uh-huh.
As a local councillor in the Pretoria municipality where I sat for 5 years, from 2000 to 2006. And then from there, I engaged quite seriously in farming. I'm producing mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'm producing a famous tree now. I guess South Africans are learning about it. It's called Moringa.
Mm-hmm.
And we are producing sweet potatoes and oranges. I produce lots of oranges. I find it it's really pleasant. It's a major change in my life that I'm beginning to discover that I didn't even know much about agriculture, but now I think I can stand on any platform and talk about mushrooms, about moringa, about oranges, and so on.
Amazing transition. Philip, we're almost out of time. If I ask you to look back now over 20 years of democracy, what
yes.
for you is the achievement of which you are most proud that our country has pulled off?
The proudest thing is that we had change in a remarkable way, something that we had never really imagined. And we want to give respect and honor, and I don't care who says what, respect and honor to a man like F.W. de Klerk. That's one.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, it doesn't matter who thinks about him. I have that special personal respect because he could see ahead
mm-hmm.
the future of our country. And side by side, Nelson Mandela, who played that role, and they brought us to where we are today.
That was the late Philip Khosana speaking to me 3 years ago, marking 20 years of democracy in South Africa. And I can't help wondering what his answer to that question would have been today if we'd reflected on the state of the nation. Philip Khosana passing away at the age of 80. The PAC tells us he is survived by his wife, Alice, as well as five children.